I'm standing in Facebook's $300 million headquarters in 2018, and something feels deeply wrong. The building gleams with the confidence of a tech cathedral, yet in my bag are 1,400 pages of leaked documents revealing catastrophic failures in content moderation worldwide. As polished executives discuss specific challenges with thoughtful precision, I notice a troubling blindness. They cannot see how their platform's fundamental architecture is rewiring human behavior itself. When I mention viral rumors triggering mob violence or QAnon's explosive growth, their eyes glaze over. Later, I'll discover why. Internal research warning that our algorithms exploit the human brain's attraction to divisiveness had been shelved to protect user engagement. This pattern, growth over safety, would repeat across platforms, countries, and crises, leaving a trail of real-world devastation few imagined possible when social media first promised to connect the world. Every phone check is a pull on a slot machine engineered by elite behavioral psychologists. That notification dopamine hit delivers the same neurochemical rush as gambling or drugs. This isn't accidental. It's the business model. Social media platforms deliberately use intermittent variable reinforcement, the most addictive reward pattern possible. You never know if your next post will explode or vanish, creating unpredictable rewards that keep you compulsively returning despite making you unhappy. Studies show people who deactivate accounts experience more happiness and less anxiety, yet the average American checks their phone 150 times daily. Facebook's like button hooks into our sociometer, our evolutionary mechanism for monitoring social acceptance. While offline approval happens rarely, social media delivers dozens of public affirmations daily, activating reward centers like gambling jackpots. Platforms also exploit tribal instincts, surfacing content that activates primitive emotions while bypassing empathy. By 2012, content creators cracked the formula. Identity-affirming content, especially in-groups humiliating out-groups, generates massive engagement, a digital environment engineered to hijack our deepest social instincts. August 2014's Gamergate controversy over developer Zoe Quinn marked a turning point. Gaming forum outrage evolved into coordinated harassment, hundreds of death threats, doxing, and swatting false emergency calls triggering police raids. This pioneered identity-based conflict politics that would manifest in movements from incel extremism to Trumpism. When developer Brianna Wu approached social media companies, she found Silicon Valley's predominantly young white male leadership oblivious to real-world consequences. Facebook wouldn't engage at all. By 2016, Reddit and YouTube's algorithms pushed users toward increasingly extreme content. Former extremist David Sherritt described progressing at 15 from video game clips through pro-atheism videos, anti-feminism content, men's rights videos, and eventually neo-Nazi material. YouTube's algorithm had become a radicalization engine, creating new content clusters linking mainstream channels with virulent extremists. This digital radicalization manifested physically at 2017's Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, where previously unconnected fringe groups mobilized through platforms that had algorithmically merged extremist communities. By January 6, 2021, Richard Barnett, a 60-year-old Arkansas contractor and Facebook obsessive, joined thousands storming the Capitol in a movement built on social media, planned with no planners, coordinated among thousands with no coordinators. 16-year-old Mateos Dominguez discovered far-right YouTuber Nando Mora through YouTube's recommendation algorithm. Mora's videos accused feminists and politicians of communist indoctrination, while entertaining viewers with jokes and guitar riffs. The algorithm then recommended other far-right bloggers, including Jair Bolsonaro. When YouTube installed its deep learning AI in 2016 to chase its billion-hour watch time goal, far-right YouTubers in Brazil saw their exposure skyrocket. Right-wing channels grew substantially faster after the algorithmic upgrade, with Bolsonaro mentions increasing dramatically even when his poll numbers remained low. YouTube wasn't reflecting real-world trends, it was creating them. Brazilian students confirmed YouTube's overwhelming influence. 95% of kids here use YouTube. It's the main source for information, said 17-year-old Inzaghi. Game videos suddenly led to Bolsonaro content. Students increasingly interrupted teachers with conspiracies from YouTube personalities. The consequences were profound. Bolsonaro urged citizens to watch YouTube rather than reputable news and replaced government technocrats with social media personalities. We have something here that we call the dictatorship of the like, explained Pedro de Rot. Once you open that door, there's no going back because you always have to go further. Social media hadn't eliminated political gatekeepers, it had replaced them with algorithmic ones that favored engagement over popularity, giving fringe candidates disproportionate advantages. Myanmar exemplified social media's catastrophic potential. Between 2012 and 2015, internet use surged from 0.5% to 40%, with Facebook preloaded as the primary gateway. Despite early warnings about hate speech, Facebook employed just one Burmese-speaking moderator. When Buddhist monk Warathu spread false claims about Muslims, including a fabricated rape story that triggered deadly riots in Mandalay in 2014, Facebook remained unresponsive. Government officials couldn't reach the company during the crisis. The pattern repeated in Sri Lanka in early 2018. When a customer found something in his beef curry at the Atham Lebe Brothers restaurant, he began yelling about sterilization pills, a false rumor. Farsif, 28, didn't speak Sinhalese. Trying to defuse the situation, he said in broken Sinhalese, "I don't know, yes, we put?" The crowd took this as confirmation, beat him, destroyed the restaurant, and set the local mosque on fire. The 18-second confession clip spread through Facebook groups. Posts calling for genocide flooded the platform. Kill all Muslims, don't even save an infant. Mobs coordinated through Facebook and WhatsApp, burning Muslim homes, mosques, and businesses for 3 days. Only when the government blocked all social media did the violence immediately stop, and only then did Facebook representatives finally return calls, concerned about their zeroed-out traffic rather than the violence. Jacob, a Facebook content moderator turned whistleblower, faced an impossible task. What began as straightforward content removal had ballooned into over 1,400 pages of labyrinthine guidelines handed to low-paid workers expected to process 400 to 500 posts daily, each decision potentially affecting millions. The hate speech rulebook alone sprawled across 200 pages, requiring moderators to perform linguistic calculus within 8 to 10 seconds per post. The guidelines contained glaring contradictions. Attacks on migrants were forbidden, but similar rhetoric targeting immigrants might be allowed, depending on complex contextual rules. Independent thinking became career suicide. This is the biggest sin when you're accused of imposing your own judgment, Jacob explained. Multiple departments issued competing rulebooks, while outsourcing agencies created unauthorized shadow guidelines to boost compliance metrics. Jacob's leaked documents revealed disturbing systematic failures. In India, Facebook's largest market, moderators worked from legally dubious guidelines that restricted protected speech. Performance quotas forced impossible choices between accuracy and speed. This dysfunctional approach reflected Silicon Valley's deeper cultural hubris, the conviction that complex social and political challenges could be reduced to engineering problems solvable through algorithms and flowcharts. By May 2021, Facebook employee Frances Haugen had seen enough. She copied thousands of internal documents, revealing the company knew its harms often exceeded critics' worst fears. Internal reports explicitly warned of dangers that later proved deadly, like spikes in hate speech or vaccine misinformation. Testifying before a Senate subcommittee, Haugen stated, "We could have social media that connects us without tearing apart democracy or endangering children." When asked what would most effectively reform platforms, her answer was simple: turn off the algorithm. The brief window after the Capitol siege quickly closed. Facebook's reforms proved superficial. Zuckerberg announced the company would no longer promote political groups, the third time Facebook made this promise. When Australia threatened Facebook's revenue by requiring payment to news outlets, the company blocked all news content nationwide, something it had never done during Myanmar's genocides. The blackout affected government health offices during the pandemic and weather services during floods. Australia capitulated within days. We face a fundamental choice. Can we reclaim our digital future from algorithms designed to exploit our psychological vulnerabilities? The platforms won't reform themselves. The question is whether we have the courage to demand platforms that serve human needs rather than advertising metrics.